Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Richard Hasson, the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine. He is a nationally recognized expert in election law and campaign finance regulation and is co-author of a leading casebook on election law. He served as founding co-editor of the quarterly peer-reviewed publication Election Law Journal, and he is the author of more than 80 articles on election law issues published in numerous journals, including the Harvard Law Review, Stanford Law Review, and Supreme Court Review. His latest book is The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. Welcome to Background Briefing, Richard Hasson.
Always good to be with you.
And Rick, it doesn't look like there's going to be so much an election meltdown in this upcoming midterm elections in November as hanging chads and et cetera. It looks like all of the devious, nasty, and underhand stuff is going to be done before the election.
Well, you know, I think we don't go through any national election these days where there's not at least one close race where things could go into overtime. And so, you know, we don't know if a meltdown would be coming, but because it's not a presidential election on the line, I think we worry about it a little less, although it is certainly possible that the Senate could be on the line. It could be very close there. But I do think you're right that much of the fighting over our elections these days takes place before we get to Election Day and takes place instead in terms of the rules for voter registration, which are very important in terms of who's going to actually be eligible to vote on Election Day.
And the lead article in Sunday's New York Times is New GOP Bid to Limit Voting in Swing States. It talks about these new bills, laws, and administrative rules in Ohio, Wisconsin, and North Carolina, which are aimed at suppressing the Democratic vote. There's also a possibility, of course, that they may inspire Democrats to turn out in November. How do you think it's going to break?
Well, you know, Democrats have a problem in midterm elections, regardless of what Republicans are doing, in terms of getting turnout up. They make a much greater effort in the presidential election years. And so already I expect, you know, we'll see relatively depressed turnout numbers among Democrats. And in part, that's also because Republicans are more energized. So it'll be very hard to know, even if turnout goes down, how much is it a result of anything done by Republican legislatures versus other factors that are independent of that.
Well, we know that there's a direct connection between the Supreme Court ruling on the 1965 Voting Rights Act of pre-clearance of southern states. When the Supreme Court lifted that ruling or lifted that requirement on the part of southern states, immediately thereafter, North Carolina passed the Republican-dominated government in North Carolina, state government in North Carolina, passed a whole bunch of measures which have been sharply reducing the voting days, establishing rules that make it more difficult for people to register to vote or cast provisional ballots or vote absentee. So there has been clear movement, at least in the state of North Carolina, in relation to that Supreme Court decision. Is there anything? I mean, there was some legislative attempt to fix that. Where does that stand?
Well, all right, so let's back up. There are two things going on. One is that since 2000, we've seen mostly Republican legislatures, to some extent Republican secretaries of state and other officials, creating rules that make it harder to register or to vote. You could think of voter ID laws, cutting back on early voting, making it harder to register to vote. So that was going on before the Supreme Court's decision in the Shelby County case last summer. What's happened since then is that those states that used to be subject to federal preclearance, and you mentioned most notably North Carolina, they were now freed and could pass new laws. North Carolina's law, much of it is on hold because it doesn't kick in until later elections. And there's going to be both Texas, which passed a tough voter ID law, in North Carolina, there are going to be trials on whether these laws violate other provisions of the Voting Rights Act. And we're not going to get any ruling on those before the 2014 election, but we should get something before the 2016 election. I think other states are watching to see whether courts are going to block these new rules. And if they don't, then I expect we're going to see more Republican-dominated states passing laws that make it harder to register and to vote.
So is this just going to go on forever? I mean, we have the U.S. has the strangest voting system, and whether it goes back to the DNA of the founding fathers who only wanted white men of property to vote. No other democratic country that I can think of has such even the business of registering to vote. Right next door in Mexico, people, when they turn 18, get a national card, like an ID card, and it proves who they are. And none of this nonsense about voter fraud, which apparently is minimal at best, ever comes up. So I thought after Florida there would be a real national debate to end all of this. I guess it goes back to the founding fathers who needed to get the 13 states aboard, so they gave them the rights to have conduct their own elections, and of course that trickles down to counties having their own laws. So you have this incredible hodgepodge of different rules. Is there any chance that there will be a national debate, or is there any way around this, what seems to be a sort of the most dysfunctional voting system in the world?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the most dysfunctional in the world, but I would say that among mature democracies, ours is the most decentralized and probably the least professional, in part because it is so decentralized. And there's a variety, a wide variety of approaches to how we run our elections, and that lack of uniformity itself sometimes creates problems. The Constitution divides power on elections between the states and the federal government. Since 2000, you'd think that we would move towards a more rational national system, but in fact things have moved in the opposite direction, and that modest attempts to make things more national have been fought back. So Congress created an advisory commission called the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, and it's become so mired in politics that it now has no commissioners because Republicans will not nominate anyone to serve on the commission, and they will not approve the Democratic nominees for the commission. In fact, in the last few weeks, things have gotten worse in this regard in terms of the centralization question, because a federal court in Kansas recently held that the federal government's going to have to allow states like Kansas and Arizona that want to check citizenship papers before they allow people to vote to the federal government on its uniform voter registration card, which anyone can fill out anywhere in the country to be registered to vote. They're going to have to ask for citizenship information for residents of these two states, and Alabama may now be joining along. So there's a clash now between the federal government's power to set the manner for federal and congressional elections and the state's power to set voter qualifications. And I expect we're going to see more litigation on this. And if it goes the way it went in the lower court, states will have even greater power to decide who gets to vote and what the rules are, even in federal elections.
So Richard Hasson, again, the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine, and author of The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. Is there any possibility then, given the dubious chances of fixing this system that you've just pointed out has actually gone in the wrong direction since Florida 2000, which was certainly a wake-up call and an international embarrassment, frankly? What about the idea of shame, if you will? I can't think of a better word. I noticed that a Wisconsin Republican was appalled at the latest moves in Wisconsin to restrict the vote on the part of the Republican legislature and Governor Scott Walker. What about that idea of appealing to the idea of a level playing field, we are in a democracy and the vote is both a right and it's a precious right, and people have fought and died for it. We keep hearing that in terms of all of the sacrifices and all of the wars, et cetera. And yet it seems to be there's no moral sanction against those who deliberately try to deny people the vote.
Well, you know, I do think that there may be a backlash, and you suggested this at the beginning of this discussion, that in some places, like Florida, for example, after the 2012 election, when people waited online for so long and Florida was once again a laughingstock when it comes to voting, that Florida put back in place the early voting it had rolled back. And in some places, like Wisconsin, Governor Scott Walker has not been willing to go as far as the Republican legislature in terms of cutbacks in early voting. He's allowed some cutbacks, but not total cutbacks. And so there may be something to this idea that at some point the public just thinks this is a transparent attempt to make it harder for people likely to vote Democratic to vote. The other place where we're seeing somewhat of a backlash is in the courts. And so in Wisconsin, even the Republican-dominated state Supreme Court is expected to strike down or perhaps limit the voter ID law that was passed in that state because it is too difficult for many people to get their IDs. And Walker is talking about holding a special session of the legislature to pass yet another voter ID law to try and fix the problems if the law gets struck down. So I think at some point, there may be diminishing returns to this. It does play to the Republican base, but I think for everyone else, it looks like a pretty transparent attempt to skew the electorate in Republicans' direction.
And in terms of the other part of your specialty, Rick Hassan, which is campaign finance regulation, clearly Harry Reid is worried that the Koch brothers are going to by Republican control of the Senate, and they seem to determined to have Mitch McConnell as the new majority leader, and they are outspending and the various other groups. It's not all the Koch brothers, but all of these 501c4s that are out there are outspending the Democrats, and conversely, the Democrats are using the idea of a couple of billionaire brothers buying the next election as a kind of rallying cry. Who do you think is going to win? I mean, clearly the Republicans are going to win the money race, but who do you think is going to win the voting race as far as...
There is no direct connection between the amount of money spent and electoral outcomes, right? We know you need enough money to get taken seriously, but I don't think it's going to be money that's going to necessarily determine the outcome of these races. I do think that Democrats have found that it polls well to have a villain, and the Koch brothers are a good villain compared to some of the other targets out there. But Democrats are facing electoral trouble, particularly in this cycle. They probably will do better in 2016. But Democrats are doing whatever they can to play off the Koch brothers to try and raise money to make it competitive in those races, especially in the South or in Alaska, where you don't expect the states to necessarily go Democratic, and you've got these Democratic senators that are, in some cases, just hanging on by a thread. So it certainly could go either way when it comes to control of the Senate in the next election.
Well, Richard Hassan, I thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Richard Hassan, who's a Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine. He's a nationally recognized expert in election law and campaign finance regulation and is co-author of a leading casebook on election law. He served as founding co-editor of the quarterly peer-reviewed publication Election Law Journal, and he's the author of more than 80 articles on election law issues published in numerous journals, including the Harvard Law Review, Stanford Law Review, and Supreme Court Review. He's also the author of The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.